You're listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast, hosted by Joe Hunter on the Sound of Life at soundoflife.org.
I want to applaud those states that have taken a big affirmation for life. A lot of times there's a lot of misrepresentation that comes out, and a lot of people are, you know, threatening, oh, you're going to pay for this and all that. Remember, the state of Georgia a few months ago passed a pro-life law, and some very well-known Hollywood people were saying, we're boycotting, that's it, we're done with Georgia. A lot of people film in Georgia. And so there's some figures out right now that are kind of interesting, to say the least, about the money spent in Georgia on filming, despite the, quote, boycott over a new pro-life law. Georgia experienced actually a record investment, almost $3 billion invested in the state through film and television productions in this year so far, according to new data from the state. The governor, Brian Kemp, and the Global Commerce and Film Divisions announced that 399 film and television projects were filmed in the state in the fiscal year. Oh, fiscal year runs from July 1st, 2018 to through June 2019. So that was almost $3 billion invested in the state through projects, topping the previous record of $2.7 billion that was set last year. So it still seems to be kind of the place to be. See, that's where that voice of truth comes in, doing what is right to do. Truett Cathy, years ago, set up his restaurant. It's one of the simplest things ever. Serve fried chicken sandwiches. People like them. They're really good. It's got waffle fries there. I don't know. I don't get them anymore. They're not around my area, and I can't eat it anyway. I can eat the waffle fries, and I guess have a sweet tea, but they're incredibly popular. But he made the decision, well, I'm going to honor God by not being open on Sunday. I'm going to say, everybody, take a break. Take a Sabbath. All right? And now here he finds himself the most popular restaurant in the country. So I think those are signs that say, you go with what you know God wants you to do. Even though people may be screaming at you that, oh, it's a huge mistake, or you're nervous about what might happen financially, you honor God, okay? All right.
The Sound of Life.
So this guy's working in New Zealand, Joshua Jack. I thought Jack was his first name. Sorry. I'm sorry, Joshua. He got an email from his bosses at an advertising agency in Auckland, New Zealand. FCB is the name of it. And he said a meeting is being held to discuss your future at the company. You could bring any kind of a friend or a family member as a support person. So he shared photos from the meeting, which featured, you ready for this? A clown. He brought a clown. That's right. He paid to have a clown come in full makeup, making balloon animals, while Jack's superiors at the company broke the news that he was indeed being let go. Story has a happy ending. He already has a new job with a competing agency, DDB. Now, think about that, UK. You've got your, I guess because, you know, whoever was assigned, and you're in that department, human resource, the HR department at a big company, and you're assigned to, this is how we're going to do. You go through the procedure, and he comes in with a clown who sits bed in the back. Something like a radio announcer would do, making balloons. But you are so into your job that you have to keep doing it, because that's what you were assigned to do today, and that's what you're going to do, you know. And then you're thinking, would you be thinking that the thought ever crossed their mind, this guy is pretty clever, and it is pretty funny, and the photos are going to be really funny, and it's a really good advertisement, really, for him. You know, is there a possibility that our competition is going to pick him up instead? So I thought it was very clever. Had a lot of neat things going on in it. You figured, okay, I'm being fired, so I might as well bring a clown if you're being fired to make balloons. Not a bad idea.
Any town that could dream up a hoax like this has a sense of humor that I wouldn't try to compete with.
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show. The Sound of Life.
What an incredible story that is out now, but happened back in the early 1940s. You see, thousands of Jews in Nazi-occupied Italy were being sent to concentration camps in the fall of 1943. I remember talking to a man who now is in his 90s, who at that time, I think, was 16, living in Paris. And he said everybody knew what was happening. All the Jews were being rounded up, put on trains, and shipped out of town all the time. And we knew what was happening. They did in Italy as well, too. So what did they do? Had to think of something clever to try to save as many Jewish people as they could. They did something that's ingenious. And just in the last couple of years, this story is being told, they fabricated a disease so contagious and so deadly that the Nazi soldiers would be too scared to even be in the same room as anyone infected by it. Their actions weren't revealed for 60 years. Began in October of 1943, Nazis raided a Jewish ghetto near Rome's Tiber River. As they were being rounded up, the doctors hid a number of runaways inside the walls of the nearby hospital. It was then that the doctors, including Vittorio, and Giovanni, of course, came up with a plan to diagnose the refugees with a fictitious disease. They called it Syndrome K. And to pull it off just right, the Nazis had to believe that these patients had a lethal disease that could infect anyone who came in contact with them in the cramped quarters of the deportation trains. One sick passenger could infect everyone on board, soldiers included. And they convinced him. Absolutely. Was it a God thing? The name Syndrome K came from a Dr. Adriano, who was a physician working at the hospital, who knew they needed a way for the staff to differentiate which people were actually patients and which were Jews in hiding. It's one of the things they thought about real quick. Inventing a fake disease cut out all the confusion when a doctor came up with Syndrome K patient. Everyone working there knew which steps to take. Syndrome K was put on the patient's papers to indicate the sick person wasn't sick at all, but they were Jewish. And this got out in 2016. All this was kept a secret. It's incredible. He said, we created these papers for Jewish people as if they were ordinary patients. And in the moment when we had to say the disease they suffered, it was Syndrome K, meaning I am admitting a Jew. And if he or she were ill, but they were all healthy, the idea to call it Syndrome K, like Kesserling or Kapler, was mine. They were Nazis, by the way. That's why they called it Syndrome K. That's what the doctor said. Anyway, it worked. The Nazi troops were scared to death. I mean, you can't help, you know, we saw what happened in the mid-80s with AIDS. They wouldn't even bother to inspect the people in the rooms. You know, they'd raid the hospital. Oh, they've got Syndrome K. So there were children also. So the doctors had to coach them on how to cough violently enough to ward off any inspections that curious soldiers might want to conduct. All right. The Nazis thought it was like a cancer, tuberculosis, and they fled like rabbits, said one of the doctors. It's telling the BBC did a thing on about, I guess, back in 2004. But absolutely incredible. I was reading this. I thought, wow, the things that we still don't know, everything that came about that to thwart the and to help rescue of Jewish people. Just incredible. The actual number of people saved by the doctors was probably around a couple of dozen. I mean, you know, no matter the final tally, though, the quick thinking and ingenuity of these doctors, it was a glimmer of hope during a time when happy endings were in short supply. Thought I'd just lay some of that amazing news on you that's kind of getting out now. God bless you. People take action. They see this. It's dire situations. And like the reporter said to the man who was 16 years old helping rescue Jews with altering their papers, weren't you scared? He said scared. Couldn't be scared. There was no time to be scared.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
It didn't make any sense, I guess, when the captain straddling decided to maroon Alexander Selkirk. Now, maybe Selkirk, New York gets its name from Alexander Selkirk. They're in the South Pacific in September of 1704. What is it about islands in the South Pacific? You know, Mutiny on the Bounty was there, and so the I guess because people from Europe came there, and it was like, dude, we're on vacation forever. We're in paradise. I mean, that must have been what it seemed. And they, I don't want to get back on the ship. I know. These are friendly people. I don't know if they did or not. That necessarily was, that certainly wasn't the case, for missionaries in by the mid 1800s, but this was way early. 1704. So Captain Selkirk is left stranded on this island. He did have a few supplies, and one of those was a Bible. Now he did get rescued, and in fact, he became, his story became the inspiration for Daniel Defoe's Robinson Crusoe.
And here that, he is, Mr. Know-it-all.
Pretty much, yes.
Hey, this is Crowder, and you're listening to Cup of Joe Morning Show. It's my favorite. It's how you start your day, and you know, day is going to get better and better.
I just saw this kind of a headline. It says, man designs tabletop gardens for people in wheelchairs. And I thought, man, somebody's giving himself for somebody who maybe needs something, right? Terry Garrett witnessed his ailing brother. Lose the ability to pursue his love of gardening. Well, see, that's what happens when people see other, not everybody's going to do that, but somebody's going to see somebody and they see a need right there and they go, you know what I'm going to do? I think I'm going to help him out right there, because regardless of whether they're confined to a wheelchair or not, I mean, man, they should be able to keep their green thumbs in the dirt, right? So he masterminded the elevated garden. How about that? He brought the garden up to them. It's a tabletop garden that has been designed specifically for people in wheelchairs. It's 30 inches tall. The gardens have been used in nursing homes and assisted living facilities because they limit the amount of bending and physical activity that's typically required by traditional gardening. This is going to start a trend right there. I mean, isn't that just wonderful? Don't you just love to get right down there on your knees? That's where they got those, all those knee pads and those special little scooters you buy to, so you can sit down there. I passed a man in the garden recently, been over there, you know, and I thought, that's tough work right there. Man, this is, the tabletop garden might just be the latest big thing right there. Thank you very much, Terry. God bless you, man. Everybody can get on a garden that's just reached right out 30 inches. Loving that.
The sound of life.
Well, I found out Kyler has a storage unit full of shoes, and that's a little strange for a 14-year-old. I mean, they are packed to the ceiling, all organized and ready, because Kyler gives them away. A 14-year-old has a nonprofit called Kyler's Kicks. That's what they're called, and his mission is to give people shoes in need. Shoes is a big deal. I've taught the people who have missions around the world who give shoes. This isn't around the world. This is right in the city here in this country in Las Vegas. It stems out of a real tragedy, kids. I mean, this is really, really ugly. Kyler has a thing about his Achilles, I guess, that makes him walk on his toes, kind of. And he just goes through shoes like crazy. But the problem is, as he got older in school, he would get bullied for them for that reason. Because he kind of, it looks like he's doing it on purpose, probably. You know, they don't understand. The kids don't understand. He was 11, and somebody in school stuck a pencil right in his chest. Mother said, we thought we were going to lose him. His lung collapsed. It was a really bad day. Isn't it amazing, though, how he came out of all that? And Kyler's attitude is basically, you can't just tell people to be kind. You have to show it. It's an incredible story. Kyle has just said, you know, he finds a need because he himself knows what it's like to basically, the second day he wears them, just destroy a pair of shoes. It's just amazing. You know, but he's focused on his mission of lending a hand, or as I should say, a shoe, where it's needed most. Every morning, he said, the first thing I think about is getting up and giving more to others. And to me, that's just the most beautiful part of this whole story. It's incredible. He said basically the reason that he does it is because it is a healing process for him. He is in the process of healing. He has suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder since that day in the hallway. Nightmares, flashbacks, PTSD is a struggle, and it's very real. They said he didn't want to come out of the apartment, didn't want to talk to anybody. He was scared of his own shadow. Isn't that something? So he focused his energy into organizing shoes by size. And, I mean, he would take, get them and clean them up, make them look really nice. He said, I'm turning a bad thing into a good thing. It's interesting how he's physically doing it, and it works on him, his mental state as well, too. Kyler's Kicks is not only a kindness movement, but it's a healing movement, his mom said. He's had people, news people do stories on him and stuff, and maybe you've seen about that. But it's a big deal. It's a really big deal. He has given away 25,000 pairs of shoes. It's just amazing. 25,000 pair of shoes, I guess, was a woman who had she walked away with a black pair of Skechers, walking shoes. And that was the 25,000 pairs of shoes. I'm just amazed when I see these accounts of people who see a need and they feel for whatever reason it is, and they start a ministry, a mission, and it just blossoms. It's just absolutely amazing. Kyler's Kicks, they're spreading positivity and kindness along the way. So that is success. You better believe it is.
The Sound of Life.
I was thinking, those of you who wear suits, ties, shirt, maybe a vest is apropos now. You know, you're getting into a little bit thicker jacket, maybe, or maybe you wear the same jacket all year round. You know, that's why July is pretty tough. But right now it's nice because you dress like that and it just feels good, feels perfect, right? And I was thinking about the double-breasted jacket I have. It's actually part of a suit. It's nice. I have hanging up. I've been through a few of those seasons of double-breasted look. I remember that. Was it high school? Was in high school? It's interesting, isn't it? You can go way back for that. Probably my grandfather, you know, were different styles of jackets and stuff. That whole jacket thing. I remember watching Downton Abbey where they had to wear the right jacket to dinner or you'd get fussed at. You know, you were like, oh dear. What's my good man? What are you doing? It was just way out. So it's interesting, you know, and a lot of that still, believe it or not, carries on. Would I be laughed at if I wore, I just don't see people with a double breasted look, but I like it because it tucks everything in. It's like that sweater. it just tucks everything in and it's nice, you know? I don't know. We're after Labor Day, you know? Do you dare wear white anything after Labor Day?
You can't wear white shoes after Labor Day.
That's not true anymore.
Yes, it is. Didn't your mother ever tell you?
Don't you know you're not supposed to wear white after Labor Day?
Now you know.
No, please. Fashion has changed.
No, it hasn't.
Oh, dear.
It's Cup of Joe Morning Show.
With Joe Hunter.
I'm just getting warmed up.
The Sound of Life.
You know, you think you got a tough road witnessing, and I'm not trying to take that away from you. You know, you're at school, work, wherever you are, in your circle of friends and things, following Jesus and stuff. I tell you, be encouraged. A newly discovered propaganda video is revealing how the North Korea government seeks to silence Christianity by painting believers as religious fanatics or spies, or as this one pastor who recently was assassinated said, I just was taught to believe that don't ever go into their home. If you get into their home, they'll end up eating your organs. That's what he thought. He was petrified if a person was a believer in God. Got somebody mentioned God, mentioned Jesus, had a Bible. This man ended up giving him a Bible. And he ended up becoming a follower of Jesus, going back and forth between North Korea and China. I think there's a lot of that going on. Don't tell the North Koreans that, because they really don't want, but I think there's a lot of that going on. I really do. And this man did that. It knew it was at great peril to his life. He led 1,000 people to Jesus. 1,000 people to Jesus, knowing. I just wonder what the movie's going to be. And it was a book about this. Amazing. The assassination team did get to him, though. They're very proud of themselves now because they eliminated this great threat. Whew, tough. And he wasn't that old. But they do it one after the other. It's amazing. It's incredible. And, boy, I have to say, North Korea painting that picture, man, just about as dark as anybody, including the Roman Empire, did, boy, I tell you. But, you know, really, over the years, over those that couple thousand of years since Jesus, God, came as man to the earth, demonstrated how God really is, how he's a healer, compassionate, loving you, understanding you in your walk and life and temptations, understanding that, giving himself not only for you while you were an unbeliever, but all those who were cursing at him and spitting on him and stuff, you know. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. The attitude of God, a holy God. Wow. So far away from the mind of what we are, what we think. It's pretty incredible. But has the enemy really changed that much over the years when you see different things, you know? It's the same. A roaring lion. Got no power. Got no teeth in the roaring lion. But still, you know, convincing a lot of people. Keep on keeping on.
Hey, this is Drew from We Are Messengers, and thank you for listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show.
I wish this wasn't such a sad story, because it really hits home onto what I think really is really coming after your children in school once they get to be teenagers. For some reason, the temptations coming down the pike are amazing, and one of the very dangerous things is heroin and drugs. And Allie was a beautiful, smart teenager with loving parents who, for some reason, tried heroin, got addicted, but then she realized it, went into rehabilitation, and afterwards, her advice was just turn and run. Just saying no is not enough. Now, the sad part about that story is she relapsed, and she died of an overdose at the age of 22. And in an attempt to keep others from the same fate, her heartbroken parents appeared on a local news program encouraging listeners to run for Allie by staying far from situations where they could be exposed to drugs and other dangers. Very real. The Apostle Paul urged the same thing. He wrote the letter to his spiritual son, Timothy, and hence to us. It's in the Bible. And the Apostle Peter, of course, warned too, your enemy, the devil. He's the one that said the devil's like a prowling lion, or like a roaring lion prowling around looking. Okay. Resist him. Stand firm in the faith. Run. None of us is immune to temptation. None of us. And often the best thing to do is to steer clear of situations where we'll be tempted. They can't always be avoided, but we can be better prepared by having a strong faith in God based in the Bible and strengthened through prayer. So when we stand firm in the faith, we'll know when to turn and run to God. Amazing. Lord, there's so many temptations out there today. For my friends, help them to watch and pray so that they won't fall. And thank you, Father God, for welcoming us back when we do. In Jesus' name, amen.
The Sound of Life.
So I got this tweet and had John Locke in it. I thought, remember that from history, don't I? And I kind of forgotten about John Locke. He was very influential in European Enlightenment. Empiricism, liberalism, the Declaration of Independence, that's ours, and the U.S. Constitution. John Locke's interpretations of the nature and foundations of political authority, human freedom, and natural law, basically, have stood the test of time. Pretty amazing. I was learning something. Some suggest Locke's writings inspired the phrase, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we blame Thomas Jefferson. Of course, he's the one that said he wrote the Declaration of Independence. But they say that John Locke is the one that inspired this. A lot of people say, why did you put in there pursuit of happiness? Why did you write? He wrote, all mankind are all equal and independent, based on the idea that all people are the, quote, the workmanship of one omnipotent and infinitely wise maker. See, that being included in the document of this country set this country apart, realizing that we are humans and we are bound to fail. We have a tendency to fail, to be selfish, to look after our own needs. That's the reason the government was set up with different branches of government, different authorities. They could vote each other out, you know, cancel out each other, not just one group going, yeah, whatever we say runs. Toward the end of John Locke's life, he wrote a detailed commentary on some of the letters of the Apostle Paul, including and on display at the Museum of the Bible. A paraphrase of Romans 1 and 2 Corinthians. Oh, paraphrase of Romans, 1st and Corinthians, Galatians, and Ephesians. Man, I'd like to see that. I guess I have to go to the Museum of the Bible, as my mother-in-law said. Where is that? I said, in Washington, D.C.
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show. The Sound of Life.
So, talking about sports and Mason Rudolph. You never heard of Mason Rudolph, have you? You think he's in like a Christmas story or something. He's a 6'5" quarterback from Rock Hill, South Carolina, that played at Oklahoma State and got the Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Award for the top senior quarterback, not only athletically, but who encapsulates all that is positive in college sports. You know, player, not only a phenomenal athlete, but one who, and I quote, values character, citizenship, integrity, and those who honor the game. That is a lot to live up to. But obviously Mason Rudolph, quite capable of stepping in for the injured Ben Roethlisberger as a quarterback, Pittsburgh Steelers. It's a big job right there. And when he was awarded the Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Award, he was featured on the cover of Fellowship of Christian Athletes magazine. Wonder why? Well, you know, I tell you about these people because they're big time in what they do. Big time in sports, in this case, celebrity, if you will, out there in the public talking all the time. And they don't shy away from talking about their faith in Jesus. And that's exactly what he did, of course, in Fellowship of Christian Athletes magazine, which is probably pretty easy to do. In the article, he explained, well, I mean, easier than, you know, other cases, but they're out there, out front. That's the thing that amazes me. Mason Rudolph was explaining how each season of football brings him closer to God, pointing out, and I quote, "It seems like during the season you just naturally become more emotional and closer to God because you're thinking about him. You're more anxious, you're more nervous." Ooh, wow, they're actually nervous. You have to turn to God with those nerves and emotions and just lean on him and trust that he's going to protect you and keep you safe. Pretty interesting. It'd be probably good to emulate that, right? He is explaining in the magazine that his faith and his relationship with Jesus Christ is what keeps him going both on and off the field. Christ is the center of it, he said. It's Christ who will always be there for you. He's your foundation. So just getting the word and leaning on a few of my life verses throughout the week, as well as constant communication with my parents and grandparents. That's my secret to success. I passionately pursue Christ because I want to be a witness for him and use this platform to impact our community. All about using the platform. Wow. You can follow him on Twitter at Rudolph2Mason if you want to. Follow him on Twitter. I know I am.
A great way to start your day. The Cup of Joe Morning Show.
Love your radio station. I listen to it every morning. It wakes me up. It inspires me. It gets me going.
The Sound of Life.
I belong to, are you ready for this? Now you might want to put your cereal spoon down a little bit. On Twitter, I follow what is known as the Auschwitz Memorial. So every day we have the fun and frivolity as people have kind of said, oh boy, if you want a big downer for the day, just look at your Auschwitz Memorial post for the day. But it's good to remember. It's just a healthy thing to do. Even though at the time it may not seem that way. It just makes you cry inside. But to honor the people that were gathered up and just sent there and destroyed just because of who they were. But some amazing things were happening, and it astounds me. And you know me, I like to talk about the resistance as it was known then. In the late summer of 1940, news was reaching about mass deaths that were happening in this place called Auschwitz in Germany. Were happening to the inmates there, and it began to reach Warsaw, Poland, which was now occupied by the Nazis. And at the time, this man known as, his name was Witold Pilecki, and he used an assumed name, and he volunteered to infiltrate Auschwitz. The reason? To set up resistance network. Provide liaison between the Polish underground and the Poles imprisoned in the camp, transfer credible data about the SS crimes, and later to prepare the camp to join the fight of favorable circumstances if it developed. Secret network was also intended to help the inmates inside boost their spirits by disseminating news from the outside, provide food, clothing, and medications, and organize escapes. Quite an ambitious plan in a place so ruthlessly controlled, and a place of great pain and suffering and death. He agreed on the plan with the commander of the secret Polish army. Man, what a brave man. Incredible. Witold Pilecki. He knowingly let himself be caught by German policemen during a roundup in a Warsaw district, and he reached Auschwitz in the so-called Second Warsaw Transport in September of 1940, the outcome of which I don't know what happened. And I don't know if anybody knows what happened, but it's an incredible light in a dark place. I thought I'd just, you know, my IQ goes up a little bit when I see. Maybe yours will too, a little bit.
Reaching the heart of the Northeast, the sound of life.
It's all a God thing when you send a text message to the wrong person. You didn't even know it was the wrong person. And then they text you back and you realize it's the wrong person. So you're like, oh, this is the situation. And you turned out to be the right person. That's actually what happened. Let's set this up. Okay. You got a son that's 4 years old. His name is Noah. He's in the ICU at a children's hospital. He has respiratory failure. He's on life support. Well, he was last week. He's experienced a seizure. His parents, Alex and Sean, have been by his side ever since, of course. He has a severe form of epilepsy. That's the diagnosis. All right. He also is autistic, and he has abnormal brain development with brittle bones and is unable to walk independently. So to help their family, Abby Fink, who is Sister Fink, I think is she's now, she texted a message offering to drop off some food. The message went to the wrong person. It was supposed to go to one of the parents. And, hey, brother, this is Sister Fink. We're bringing you dinner tomorrow. I was wondering what time would be a good time to bring it over. So it went to the wrong person, and the person that got it didn't know the situation, of course, thought they'd have a little fun, and said, oh, man, that's awesome. What are you going to bring? I don't like seafood. And then so Sister Fink got the response, and then she realized she had the wrong person, so she explained that it was meant for a family whose child was in ICU. So right away, it's all fun and games till you find out, oh, their child's in ICU. And so now it's like, so Bill is the person who got the text message wrong. He realized this situation right here, I can help out. I want to help out in this situation. I'm going to call on my Facebook friends to help out. And he asked them to donate cards too, because he said, you know, I want Noah to see the support of the community when he wakes up. It's pretty cool. And Bill went on to say, tell news agency, he said, all we have is each other. So it's our job to look out for each other. I like that. I'd make a good t-shirt and make a good way to live your life. We have each other, but we have each other, right? That's the reason we're there. So let's look out for each other. They ended up creating a GoFundMe, which has raised $11,000 so far. Sister Fink said, you know what? You're an angel. You were sent to help this sweet family. Isn't it amazing? One of the parents, it's amazing. Total stranger. And he just wanted to jump in and help. And it's a pretty cool story right there. And so no matter what the circumstances are, it's, you know, community comes together. It's the way God works.
The sound of life.
Well, these kids in this photograph, brothers holding hands and friend behind them, you know, they could be in your neighborhood, except for their neighborhood, which you can clearly see in the background, which has basically been destroyed. And smoke from fires or whatever it is, maybe the aftermath of the buildings being destroyed, I don't know. They have very pleasant looks on their faces. But inside, when you see the photograph, you just ache for that. They're in Iraq, and the good news is the light is starting to shine. It's coming out. A school that opened was brand new. In fact, students hadn't even gotten there in 2014 when ISIS forces came in and took over the place and basasically destroyed it like they did in the buildings in the rest of the town. It was looted, turned into a base of operations. Now they're not there. Well, for years, local people have been working to restore it. And recently, the children are back. Thanks to support that former IS Army base transformed back into its original purpose. Open Doors had a big to-do about that. You can just Google Open Doors. Fantastic organization. These children are going to be dreaming again and learning the truth. There's a real enemy there that does not want our children to know the truth. And it's very clear in a place like that. Very clear. Crystal clear, as they say. So they're back. And the dream, one kid said, the dream is to have people from all over the world to come here. 11-year-old said that. I hope many people from all over the world will come to visit our city and live in peace. They said they just hope that the enemy, the ISIS, would never come back. And that's pretty cool. You know, in that particular school, they will learn that when the storm comes, Jesus tells his disciples not to be afraid. Hmm. So renovation is happening. Advocacy projects have started. Trauma care projects are up and running. You know, and they know that if that's the future of that country right there, those children walking along right now, they have no idea how important their education is. They will be the leaders, the doctors, the engineers in many parts of Iraq.
You've been listening to the Cup of Joe Morning Show podcast on the Sound of Life, the Hudson Valley's 100% listener-funded Christian radio station. For more information on upcoming events, contests, to ask for prayer, and to become a member of the Sound of Life family by supporting the station, visit us at soundoflife.org.